Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, your weekly guide through matters crucial to families and the preservation of traditional values in the Commonwealth and beyond. Archives of this and past shows are available at afaofpa.org. Now your host, a dedicated advocate for family values and the director of the American Family Association of Pennsylvania, Diane Gramley.
Celebrating our nation's 250th birthday, there are still a lot of misconceptions as to who the founding fathers were, what was their character, and what was their real intention when they signed the Declaration of Independence and fought the war for independence. And I must say, by and large, the public school system is not helping in accurately answering those questions. And then we have the efforts like the 1619 Project to further undermine our nation's history. But today we're going to talk about some of our nation's heroes and the real cost of the founding of the United States. My guest is author, speaker, economist, and historian, Dr. Lawrence W. Reed. He is one of the most widely read voices in the American Liberty Movement. He spent 21 years as president of the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, followed by nearly 11 years as president of the Foundation for Economic Education, where he now serves as president emeritus. His writing has appeared in the Wall Street Journal, USA Today, the American Spectator, the Washington Examiner, and Christian Science Monitor, and many others. He has authored and co-authored more than 2,000 columns and 8 books, including Was Jesus a Socialist? And Real Heroes, Inspiring True Stories of Courage, Character, and Conviction. But today we're going to be talking about his newest book, Born of Ideas, How Principles, Faith, and Courage Forged America, which will be released on September 1st of this year. It's also received the Grove City College Distinguished Alumni Award. So, Dr. Reed, what do you do in your spare time?
Hey, thank you, Diane, for having me on today. And I guess in my spare time, I walk my dog and read a book and write another article.
Okay, because that's a lot of writing for sure. So, you know, I found it interesting that you started your new book by asking the question, in world history, how many governments have been overthrown by revolution? Then you consulted ChatGPT. What was ChatGPT's answer?
Well, its answer was so vague as to essentially be, you know, too many to count. And that's true. There have been a lot of revolutions in history, but the American one stands apart from virtually every other one because of the values, the ideas in the minds of those we call our founders and framers of our Constitution. Our revolution was truly unique amongst history of too many of them to count.
Yeah, absolutely. And compare that even in the by the same time period, the American Revolution to the French Revolution, which the American Revolution had God, and the French Revolution was godless, and the bloodshed, the bloodbaths that happened over in France after they helped us, at least some of them helped us with our American Revolution. It's interesting that you do your intro with that question, and then you go right to the 1620, the Mayflower Compact. Why is that, and not 1619, like the 1619 Project, why is 1620 the right starting point for America?
1620 is the year, of course, that the Pilgrims came over on the Mayflower, and something quite remarkable happened on that ship within a day of their landing at Plymouth. And that is this. There were about 52 pilgrims who had fled religious persecution in England, but the investors in the project put about another 50 or so on the ship that the pilgrims called strangers. And when the ship was blown off course, the strangers said, hey, we're out of here. We're not bound by our agreement. The pilgrims convinced them to sign a compact or agreement by which they said, once we land, we will set up a government of mutual consent, no tyrannies, no intolerance. And this was the first time in the history of the world when you had an agreement on governance between two groups of people that did not involve a monarch or government in any way.
Yeah, truly. You know, when I think of the efforts of the 1619 Project, zeroing in on slavery as being the founding of our nation, it's very troubling when really, you know, like you're saying, 1620 with the Mayflower Compact, when the two groups, the pilgrims and the strangers, as they called them, set up a government of consent by the people.
The 1619 Project was really a scam.
Oh yeah.
By people who had an anti-American agenda. They were trying to make it look as though slavery is what defined America, when in fact slavery has been ubiquitous all over the world for many, many centuries. America did more to put the world on a path to its extinction than anybody else.
Absolutely. And slavery is still going on today as far as that goes. I mean, a different type of slavery, but still there's slavery going on. So how can we celebrate the Declaration of Independence claim that all men are created equal when slavery did exist in the same place at the same time? Even some of our founding fathers owned slaves. So how can we really celebrate the Declaration of Independence?
Well, it represented the first great departure from what had been the rule of the day all over the world for centuries. You have to remember that in the 18th century, that is the 1700s, at the start of that century, hardly anybody anywhere in the world questioned slavery. But by the end of that century, lots of people were questioning it. And in fact, the first country in the history of the world to abolish it was Haiti, and that wasn't until 1804.
Wow.
But by that time, there were eight American states that had already abolished slavery within their boundaries. And of course, it was the American Declaration that would set us up to end slavery sooner or later because slavery was incompatible with our founding ideals.
Right. And my understanding that there was a compromise, the Southern states wanted that. I think Thomas Jefferson wanted to include an abolishment of slavery in the Declaration.
Yes.
And the Southern states
did.
Would not agree. So there was a compromise there. And then, of course, 90 years later, we had the Civil War, where I think like 600,000 Americans, black and white, died in that war. So compromise, you know, they had to do that to have a unanimous vote on the Declaration, but it was at a high cost.
Yeah, and, exactly. Yeah. They compromised for the sake of unity, but it was ultimately the Declaration that Americans would look back to in the 1860s and say, hey, we've got to carry out the ideals that we declared ourselves to be the case.
Absolutely.
So we're not exceptional because we had slavery. We're exceptional because of the lengths to which we went to get rid of it.
Yeah. I think we're the only nation that ever fought a civil war to end slavery, if I'm remembering correctly.
I think you may well be right.
So you have 32 chapters in your book, and you bring up names most Americans don't recognize, such as Warwick Charleston, Anne Hutchinson, Phyllis Wheatley, Joseph Warren, Mercy Otis Warren, the All-Black 1st Rhode Island Regiment, and others. And you deliberately profile those figures who don't always make the standard American history curriculum. Why did you include those individuals?
I thought it was important to touch a lot of bases in telling the story of America's founding. There's no reason to exclude any group by race or by status or privilege or national origin or any other reason. We had a real potpourri of people, including some Native Americans, some blacks, women, you know, not the usual suspects, who were very much involved in America's fight for independence.
Yeah.
So they need to be recognized.
Absolutely. Our family lived in Rhode Island for several years. And it's interesting that there's the blacks and Native Americans, Narragansett specifically, have intermarried. So there's churches with black and interracial couples, families, attending those churches because there really is a strong Christian influence there, even though Rhode Island is very liberal when it looks politics, but there's still a strong Native American presence, really. And again, blacks and Native Americans, Narragansett, intermarried. Okay, the All-Black 1st Rhode Island Regiment, that was during the War for Independence?
Yes.
Okay, that's kind of neat. You know, I like history. I thought I knew a lot about history, but then I'm reading down through this like, Who is this? So that's I'm going to have to get a copy of your book for sure.
That All-Black Regiment defeated the Hessians, who were German mercenaries hired by the British, in three separate attacks.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. You know, I wish so much that our public schools would make a book like this required reading so the kids can get a true picture of what our founding was really like. And not this so much revisionist history that we see in so many history books, which causes our kids to hate our country. And unfortunately, we see that more and more. And it's just very sad.
Yeah.
There's
still a lot of good teachers, but often the choice of the text to be used or the message to convey comes from higher ups.
Yeah. That's for sure. And even though Pennsylvania supposedly, when it comes to school boards, supposedly local control, but there's too many mandates coming from on high, so to speak, that they their hands are tied also. Actually, on chapter 23, you dedicate that entire chapter to the reeds of Pennsylvania. So are you connected to those reeds?
Well, I looked into it. In fact, a genealogist did some work for me. I was hoping I could find out that I'm a direct descendant, but I'm not.
Oh, no.
But I certainly would have been proud if he had found that I was.
Yeah. Wasn't a George Reed one of the signers of the Declaration, I think, or the Constitution?
You could be right. I don't recall if there was a George Reed who signed it. But Joseph Reed, who wrote about in that chapter, he was not a signatory, but he was an aide-de-camp to George Washington, and his wife, Esther, headed up the largest single private fundraising effort for the troops of the entire war.
Wow. Yeah, a lot of times we forget that they had to raise the funds for the fight. You know,
yeah.
Now they just take taxpayer dollars. But back then, back then they had to raise the funds as the army attempted to proceed with the next battle.
Yeah, the Congress didn't have the power to tax, so
that's true.
Its revenue had to come from what it could borrow, or from requests it made to the various states.
Yeah.
And at the start of the war, Congress realized that we didn't have a navy to speak of versus the British. So without the power to tax, they just said, well, we'll deputize private people with boats. And any of you who gets one of these letters of marque from the Congress can go off and assault a British vessel and sell the cargo if you want and keep the difference. And so we suddenly had a privatized navy, which ended up capturing or sinking about 600 British ships.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good for a navy that's privatized. That's kind of neat.
Yeah.
It's something like the, what do they call it, down in Louisiana, where they go and help with, not with sinking battleships, but with helping in relief efforts.
Yes.
I can't think of it.
The Cajun Navy.
Yeah, that's what it is. Right, correct. They just had a different mission. And you've been writing about liberty and economics for more than 50 years. What do the men and women you profile have to teach Americans right now when it comes to liberty?
I think several things.
Yeah.
Certainly one is courage, that liberty requires people of courage. We live in a dangerous world, always have, and there are people here in our midst and from overseas who, if they thought they could get away with it, would take your rights or your property or even your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so people who believe in liberty have to stand up and speak truth to power and muster the courage sometimes to oppose all comers. So that is one thing we need to learn. And secondly, our founders and that generation had become people of great principle. They really believed in something firmly. Principles of liberty in particular. For instance, when they said no taxation without representation, you might say, well, the British weren't taxing anywhere near as much as our government taxes today. But to the colonists, it wasn't the amount that the British were taxing. It was the principle of the thing. The fact that a parliament 3,000 miles away, in which we had no representatives, was taxing us. And that to them was more important than the amount of taxation.
That's a good point. How did our founders define liberty? I mean, they could do whatever they wanted to do, like so many Americans think liberty means now?
No, they were not. That would be kind of a silly way to look at it, even though many people think of it that way. Our founders realized that liberty doesn't mean that you get to do anything you want to anybody, that you have to operate within a framework that guarantees the equal rights of fellow citizens, that government is there to restrain some of our worst appetites of doing violence against others and their persons and property. But as long as you are peaceful and do not commit violence of any kind or fraud or deception against another, our founders said you should be free to go as far as your talents can take you, but don't do any harm to anybody else in the process.
Yeah. And I think it was John Adams who said our Constitution was only made for a moral and religious people. It would not, basically wouldn't work for any other people and people group. So, and we kind of see that playing out in today's world.
He was exactly right. I don't know of any nation in history that lost its character or its virtue and kept its liberties.
Yeah.
They are two sides of the same coin.
Yeah. That's an excellent point. Not enough people realize that. So as far as the lessons for Americans today, is don't be silent and get involved? Is that pretty much it in a nutshell?
Certainly, that's an important one. I believe in that strongly, that we shouldn't just roll over and play dead when our liberties are assaulted. We should stand up, speak truth to power, and educate our children in the principles that they are probably not getting in the public schools about liberty and our history.
That's true.
And, you know, be good citizens by example and by our activism.
Yeah, and be getting out to vote. You know, so many people just vote every 4 years, presidential election year, and that's not enough. It's necessary for us to be involved, as you're saying, including in voting and running for office if you feel the Lord leading you that way. Now, you know, a lot of people now are concerned about the price. You know, price is rising here right now. Gas is $4.29 right now. You know, they're worried about runaway inflation and such as that, and they think it only happens in third world countries. But your book cites at least one occasion when it happened here. When did that happen? Yeah.
That was during the early years of the War for Independence. Even before the Declaration of Independence, it was in 1775. That the Second Continental Congress, looking for a way to pay for the war that had started, decided to print up paper money. And in fact, it put Ben Franklin in charge of the printing presses and told him the first year only print $6 million, no more than that, or it'll decline in value. But then they kept pressuring him to print more and more. And ultimately, they printed so much that by 1780, that the paper continental dollar became utterly worthless. And so we had our own hyperinflation. At the same time, we were fighting the British.
And there's something in the Constitution about paper money, too. Yeah, it's in the Constitution. Isn't it about, it's supposed to be based on silver and gold, I believe?
The Constitution says that no state shall issue anything but gold and silver as money. It is relatively silent on what the federal government may do.
Okay.
So, which is unfortunate. Wish I'd gone further and said that the federal government can never do paper unbacked money. But now, of course, we have it, and the constitutionality of it has not been questioned.
Yeah. I know Florida for sure is going back to where you're going to exchange your paper money for gold or something along those lines. I don't know all the details.
Yeah, there are some states making moves in that direction. Ultimately, because our paper dollar is issued by Washington, we have to have fundamental monetary reform at that level to ever restore sound money.
Yeah. So can we restore sound money?
Well, I believe it's only a matter of time. Either we do it out of choice or we do it because we've ruined our paper money and have no choice in the matter but to do it.
Yeah.
That's the only question in my mind.
So steps should be taken on the federal level to address the issue. And I'm not sure if they're willing to do that or not willing to do a lot of things, seems like, in some cases. So back to the Pilgrims. I mean, they tried socialism here. You know, there's a big push for socialism here, thinking of New York City, thinking of other ones who are pushing socialism. The Pilgrims tried that, and what happened when they tried it?
The Pilgrims were obligated by the terms of the contract they had with their investors to produce and put everything they produced or farmed into a common storehouse and have it distributed equally amongst them. The investors wrongly thought that that was somehow a way to guarantee that the settlement would survive. But in fact, Governor Bradford of the colony in his diary explains that after about a year, he realized that that wasn't going to work, that there were lots of slackers among the people who thought, hey, why should I get up early and go work in the fields when I end up getting the same as the guy who does?
Yeah.
And so Governor Bradford finally said, enough of that nonsense. We're going to starve. So instead, he parceled out the land into private property holdings. And then he told everybody, you can grow on it what you want, sell it for whatever you can get. It's yours. And so how well you live is going to depend upon your efforts, not somebody else's.
So it wasn't the Pilgrims' idea, then it was their investors' idea.
That's right.
And okay.
The investors, I think, had good intentions, and some socialists today have good intentions.
Right.
Some don't, but some do. But you have to understand human nature to realize it just doesn't work.
Right. And the founding fathers understood human nature much more than we today understand, I believe, as a whole, look at America as a whole. I think we as Americans don't understand human nature as well as the founding fathers did.
I think you're exactly right. And our founders understood human nature better than the French revolutionaries a decade or so later. The French revolutionaries thought that humanity could be perfected by, smart people with political power, whereas the founders said, no, smart people with political power are usually the problem.
Yeah.
You have to set up the rules for society, but don't expect that man will ever, this side of heaven, be perfected by the human hand.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, this book is an easy read. I've not read through the whole thing, but how can folks get a copy of it? It's an easy read, and you start 1620. They have a history book right there in front of them, American history right there. So how can folks get it?
34 chapters, short and sweet, and they can get it now by pre-order on Amazon. It's to be released on the 1st of September, so you'll get it within a month. And then sooner or later, I think it'll be available at lots of other booksellers as well.
Okay, but folks can pre-order through Amazon?
Yes.
Okay, I will do that today.
Thank you.
Americans don't know, by and large, I'm not going to make it a blanket statement, by and large, do not know American history. And definitely the younger generation, by and large, doesn't know, they don't know the history of our nation. And they're getting too many tainted views of our history. So I appreciate folks like you who take the time to tell the truth about who we are as a nation. And
thank you. Yeah. It's a vital work, I think.
Absolutely. Do you have a website where folks can contact you?
Yes, I do. It's www.lawrencewreed.com. Lawrence is spelled LAWRENCE, middle initial W, last name REED, no punctuation in there, .com, lawrencewreed.com.
Just like the Reeds of Pennsylvania. I'll have to check
in. Exactly, I wish I was related to
them. Well, you may be a cousin 20 times removed or something like that, I don't know.
Could be.
Yeah.
Could be.
Hey, I appreciate your time. And again, the time that you've taken to not only write this book, but other books and articles to remind us of what liberty really is. I really appreciate that. And I encourage your folks to go to Amazon to pre-order his book. And the title of his book, once again, is Born of Ideas, How Principles, Faith, and Courage Forged America. And also visit his website at www.lawrencewreed.com. And that's Reed, R-E-E-D. Thanks so much, Dr. Reed. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Okay, you take care.
You too.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
Thank you for joining us on American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. Please note that the views and opinions expressed by our guest are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the AFA of Pennsylvania. We value your opinions as well. To continue the conversation, visit afaofpa.org, where you'll find links to all our social media. If you're passionate about defending traditional values in our state, we invite you to get involved with the American Family Association of Pennsylvania. Visit our website at afaofpa.org or write P.O. Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania 16323 to learn more and to take action. Together, we can make a difference for the families and the future of Pennsylvania.